Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So yesterday, longtime political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, John Baer, wrote a column in which he said, "So our own Rick Santorum's a hit in the initial test of 2012. What can it mean? It means the heretofore ignored Santorum gets a turn in the mixed master of presidential campaign coverage," he wrote. In other words, the greater media are going to start poking around. Well, let's poke around. John Baer, here's the outside media knocking, hoping to learn a little about Rick Santorum, your former senator and current hot ticket in the Republican race. Hello.
Hello. How are you, Brian? Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for doing this with us. And I want to play a clip of Santorum from his speech in Iowa on Tuesday night. Here's about 20 seconds.
What wins in America are bold ideas, sharp contrasts, and a plan that includes everyone. And a plan that includes people from all across the economic spectrum. A plan that says we will work together to get America to work.
So does that sound like the Santorum you know from your years of covering Pennsylvania politics?
Well, it does, Brian, but you could virtually play any clip and it would sound like the Santorum I know, because he's been on just about every issue. He's been pretty vocal, pretty aggressive, and depending on where he is or where he's going, pretty specific. It's interesting that the shift now is to the work issues, the job issues, the full employment issues, whereas obviously the principal argument in Iowa was family values, faith-based issues. So, I mean, look, he's got a whole bag full of clips, and depending on where he is, that's going to sound like him.
And much of the Santorum story that people know outside of Pennsylvania has to do with his positions on religion and sex and values. But let's linger on the economy first for a minute, because this is an economy election this year. You heard him refer in the clip to a plan that includes people across the economic spectrum. I think he's trying to make a contrast between himself and Mitt Romney there. But did he have an impact on the economic well-being of Pennsylvania when he was a congressman and senator?
Well, as you know, it's tough for any single congressman and even any single senator to have an impact on a huge state, let alone the national economy. But he, he struck out on positions that were, popular in Pennsylvania. He was in the House. He was elected to the House in 1990. He was only 32 years old. He became immediately involved in the House banking scandal, was active in that. He became immediately involved in welfare issues, which played very well in Pennsylvania. He was the author of what became the Clinton Welfare Reform Act. He had a pretty good start issue-wise, but he has always been dogged by controversy. He is Pennsylvania political journalists have been blessed in recent years with gifts that keep on giving, and that would include former Senator Spector and former Senator Santorum. I mean, they were both just total joys to cover because they were all over the map and both prone to saying things that would be controversial and newsworthy.
And here's another example. Santorum actually offered a defense of earmarks, which everybody loves to hate these days, when he was on a roundtable on Fox News in 2009. Take a listen. And listeners, pay attention, because this gets a little noisy toward the end, but it's worth it. Rick Santorum on earmarks on Fox News.
Well, first off, I'm not saying necessarily earmarks are bad. I have had a lot of earmarks. In fact, I'm very proud of all the earmarks I put in bills. Because I think, I'll defend earmarks. I think members of Congress should be able to say
So there was some crosstalk there, but what he said at the end was, quote, members of Congress should be able to put in money members of Congress should be able to put in for money that needs to be spent. So did he take care of his home state? Was he Senator Earmark in Pennsylvania?
Well, he had a good mentor in Senator Spector, who, of course, preceded him by decades in the Senate. And he smartly aligned himself with the senator once he got elected. And Spector was a champion at bringing home money to Pennsylvania, and Santorum certainly got slices of that. And look, I mean, he makes, if you listen to his full argument on this, he makes a valid point, which is the purpose of Congress is to approve the appropriation of money. And so if you approve the appropriation of money for the people who elected you, in whether it's in your district or in your state, his argument is you're doing your constitutional duty. It was only, of course, later in the McCain presidency where earmarks became a bad thing. And so he, give him credit. I mean, he's sticking with his original position on this.
In the McCain campaign, we didn't get to a McCain presidency, much to the Arizona senator's chagrin. Santorum, though, on this point, also famously offered her defense of the so-called Bridge to Nowhere in Alaska that Sarah Palin ran by denouncing and refusing the Washington money for a bridge in a remote location of Alaska. But Santorum's position was, who was he to tell Alaska what kind of spending it needed if the previous governor put in for it, right?
Right. The one consistent thing about Santorum that you'll find, Brian, throughout his career, which, you know, spans a couple of decades now. I mean, remember, he was in Congress for 16 years, two terms in the House, two terms in the Senate, is that he is never wrong. No matter what you catch him on, no matter what he has said, he always has some defense, and a lot of times it actually sounds reasonable. So people who support...
Well, all the politicians.
Well, sure, but, I mean, he's really good at it. I mean, people do underestimate... You know, if you watch Jon Stewart, if you watch Late Night Comics, you get the sense that he's just this sort of goofy guy. But he is amazingly facile in turning questions back on you and in providing what sounds like a reasonable response.
I've also read several pieces that describe Santorum's ties to the establishment of K Street lobbying firms and disgraced lobbyist Jack Abramoff. In your piece yesterday, you wrote, perhaps the national news media will look at his 2001 charity, the Good Neighbor Foundation, unregistered, run by lobbyists, and spent just 36% of what it raised on charity and 57% on salaries, travel, and such. So Santorum hasn't met a lobbyist he didn't like?
It's more than that. I mean, he was widely regarded as sort of the Senate's point man on the so-called K Street project, which ultimately led to the downfall of Jack Abramoff. And he was, people forget this, he was the number three ranking Republican in leadership in the Senate when he lost his reelection bid in 2006. So, yeah, before the sort of cover of that particular hell was pulled back, Santorum was very much involved in the K Street Project, which, as you know, Brian, was an effort to fill lobbying firms with Republicans or people that were friendly to Republican causes. So, look, when he tries to portray himself as someone who is out to change Washington, sort of a new coming outsider, you have to recall that he was in the thick of what people see as the worst of Washington, and for a long time.
Listeners, any questions about Rick Santorum as the country tries to know him better now that he tied for first in Iowa and is a serious contender in the race for the Republican presidential nomination? John Baer is here, columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, who's covered Santorum for many years. 212-433-WNYC. And folks, this is not one of those segments where you make your speeches about Santorum and tear into him or promote him. We're trying to get new information out to people who are not that familiar with him. So this is one to ask questions. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or you can post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. David Brooks wrote in the New York Times the other day about Santorum, and he said this. Santorum is the grandson of a coal miner and the son of an Italian immigrant. He has spent the last year scorned by the news media, working relentlessly, riding around in a pickup truck to more than 370 towns. He tells that story of hard work and elite disrespect with great fervor at his meetings. And in other words, I guess, John, he connects with blue-collar voters. Do you buy that view of Santorum as a working-class uniter?
He certainly tries to, and he, look, he's good on his feet and he's good in his speeches, and he always tells a story about how his grandfather worked in a coal mine until he was 72 years old, and those hands were battered and bruised and dirty, and those hands, says Rick, bought his future. And, you know, he's a lawyer. He was a member of Congress. He's running for president. And so it's a great American story, and he tells it well, and he tries to make that connection with everybody else. What's left out of the picture, of course, is that, you know, he lives in a $700,000 home in Virginia. He reportedly made close to $1 million last year through a think tank and through his long appearances as a commentator on Fox News. So like many, many politicians, there are two sides to just about everything he says.
Well, we've got a full board of calls. We haven't even gotten to Rick Santorum as a social conservative, which is how he's best known. And we'll play a clip of him on this show from a few years ago, making part of a social conservative case. But let's take some of the many phone calls that are coming in. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Tom in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. They always bring up the issue that he lost so dramatically in his recent Senate bid. Can you remind us what happened there?
John?
Yeah, I mean, what I said in the column that I wrote yesterday was Pennsylvanians got to know him. But what actually happened politically was the son of a former governor. Pennsylvania had a two-term governor, Bob Casey, the real Bob Casey. His son had just been elected treasurer of Pennsylvania, a row office, by the largest vote total of anyone ever elected to any office in the state. And so the National Democratic Party was very interested in trying to unseat Santorum. They came to Casey, and it was people like Schumer and Reid and then-Governor Ed Rendell, who had been the National Democratic chairman, came to Casey and begged him to run on the basis of name ID, on the basis of his father's legacy. And even though he had just been elected, he ran again. And look, he Casey, the current senator, was not particularly popular with the National Democratic Party. He is a so-called Reagan Democrat who is pro-life, pro-gun. But that is a great mix in Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania is a great mix of ideologies and of constituencies. So Casey runs against Santorum in a year where George Bush is enormously unpopular. This is 2006. He runs against him and does very, very well initially, and then ends up blowing him out. Nope, everybody thought it would be a tough race because Santorum is a very competent, very aggressive, hardworking politician. But Casey blows him out, 17-point win. And if you go back and look at the counties, Pennsylvania has 67 counties, the vast majority of them rural. Santorum won 32 of the 67 counties, but still lost by 17 points, which in Pennsylvania is a landslide. But he lost all of the big counties. He lost all the counties of populations. The only counties with significant populations that he won were sort of in the south central part of the state. He won four of those significantly populous counties.
Did he come to be seen as too extreme in the suburbs?
Yeah. He was painted as just a social extremist, a religion extremist, somebody who would rather have a theocracy than a democracy. And again, he was tied very much to Bush, who he supported on almost everything, including privatizing Social Security, which was not a popular issue in an aging state like Pennsylvania. Casey pushed all the right buttons. Casey was no great campaigner, but they painted Santorum as somebody that was too extreme, even for Pennsylvania.
Moshe in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello, Moshe.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Well, I think that, you know, the media is focusing a lot on Santorum as a social conservative. But, you know, I mean, his fiscal policy is actually pretty moderate. His whole plan for manufacturing jobs, you know, I mean, that's not typical Republican policy, you know, to pick one sector of the economy and say we want to help, you know, blue-collar working-class people. You know, and he's so different in that respect from, you know, the $200 million Mitt Romney with his ties to Wall Street. I wonder why that side of Santorum is not picked up on more.
Moshe, thank you. And John, does he have a point there? And I'll add that I heard the very conservative CNBC host, Lawrence Kudlow, the other day saying he knows Rick Santorum, he likes Rick Santorum, but Rick Santorum's tax policies aren't supply side enough for him.
Yeah, Moshe is right. Santorum has staked out a a different kind of economic policy by looking to really push manufacturing, which is smart because that's where most American jobs have been lost. That's certainly where most Pennsylvania jobs have been lost. And he comes from a blue-collar manufacturing area. I mean, he grew up in Butler County outside of Pittsburgh, which even to this day is still suffering from the loss of manufacturing jobs. So, yeah, it's a smart position economically to stake out. It does separate him from most of the Republican field, and it is an area that doesn't get a lot of attention because there is so much controversy in his other areas having to do with abortion or gay marriage or sex or any of this kind of social flash button issues that you want to press.
So in the coming coming debates, now that the media is taking Santorum seriously, is he going to choose to contrast his economic policies with Romney's when they hold a couple of media debates in New Hampshire this weekend, for example? Is he going to try to appeal to a certain, you know, working class base by being less identified with Wall Street, or just does that not fly in the Republican primaries in 2012?
I think he almost certainly will, given where he is in the Northeast. Again, his message will change depending on what particular state he's in. So, yeah, I think that you will see on Saturday night and again on Sunday morning during debates that I'm almost certain that that's where he'll stake his claim.
John Baer, Philadelphia Daily News columnist, who's covered Rick Santorum for many years, as we get to know this candidate now suddenly more in the spotlight, get to know him a little bit better. And let's get to the religious stuff. You offer a bit of a highlight list in your column yesterday. So listeners, if you haven't heard these things before, there was his 2002 contention that the church's child sex abuse scandals were the fault of Boston liberalism. There was a 2003 Associated Press interview during which he famously compared homosexuality to bestiality and pedophilia. There was his publicized culture of life support in 2005 for the comatose Terri Schiavo during a Florida legal fight between her husband and her parents over life support. He even went uninvited to pray with her parents, and he used the trip to get a $250,000 fundraiser for his to get to a $250,000 fundraiser for his reelection campaign. On this show, I interviewed Santorum one of the times at the 2004 Republican National Convention. He had just published his book, It Takes a Family, and he said this.
Listen to the music that's being produced in America today, particularly the music that's being produced in places where the out-of-wedlock birth rate is the highest. Look in urban radio. Are you hearing positive messages about fathers? Are you hearing positive messages about marriage? That is not the conservative movement.
So that's the Rick Santorum that many people got to know in Pennsylvania, right, John?
It is. I mean, all of those things got fairly significant play at the time. And, any time people would write about Santorum or editorialize or columnize about him, they would often, get a little replay.
Here's another quote that's floating around from October. Many of the Christian faith have said contraception is okay. It's not okay. It's a license to do things in a sexual realm that is counter to how things are supposed to be. So that's Rick Santorum not only inveighing against abortion, but against birth control, because it leads to promiscuity. Would he try to legislate against birth control?
You know, he kind of dances on those issues of how he would do as president or how he would do as a legislature. I mean, he normally says that those are separate things, that his comments are reflective of his Catholic faith, and the Catholic Church, of course, teaches that contraception is a sin. And so he, that's how he makes that separation. But there have been so many instances where, I mean, he has, for instance, you mentioned his book, It Takes a Family. In that book, Brian, he also likened abortion to slavery, and famously later said that he was surprised that President Obama, as a black man, would be pro-choice. It's hard to think that these things aren't at his core, and it's hard to think that they would somehow not influence him either as a legislator or as president.
Does he ever take any of these things back? Or does he just stand by them and this is who he is?
No, he never takes anything back. I mean, the most recent example this week, I don't know if you saw it, if your listeners saw it, was his comment in Sioux City, Iowa on Sunday when he made a reference. He was talking about entitlement programs and said basically suggesting that Democrats want to keep giving you more money so that you get your votes, so that you'll vote for them. And then he added that he doesn't want to give black people other people's money. He wants to give them opportunity. Mm. When CBS recorded this and played it, he last night on Fox and also on CNN said he didn't say black. He started to say a word and then he fumbled on it. And he said he watched it several times. Well, if you watch the clip and you can see it, it's on Huffington Post today. It's a CBS News clip. He clearly says black. So while many people came out and said, look, I mean, he's just reinforcing the Republican right wing, theory that everybody on welfare is black. He's saying, no, I didn't say that. I tried to say something else and then took it back. I know it sounds like black, but, you know, and it sure does. It sounds like black to me.
Al in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Al.
Hey, Brian. Thank you. I just wonder if John could verify something I came across a few months ago, that Santorum once said that it's true freedom to go without health insurance. Well, I can imagine being wiped out by illness, losing your home, and ending up on the street. If that's true freedom, it's pretty wacky to me.
Are you familiar with that? Did he use the terms the words true freedom and with respect to not having health insurance?
I'm honestly not. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, I think the guy's capable of saying anything. And if you asked him about it, he would probably say, well, what I meant would be it's true freedom to be healthy and not need health insurance.
Right. Of course, Ron Paul is out there, and he would say it's true freedom not to have the government subsidize health insurance.
Exactly.
This is a touchy thing, and I might as well get to it because I'm sure a lot of our listeners are saying, I can't believe they're not talking about Rick Santorum's Google problem. So we have to mention it. And here, you know, I'm describing it with as straight a face as possible. But those of you with kids, seriously, or are sensitive to sexual matters may want to turn your radio down for about the next minute. I'm reading from Wikipedia. In 2003... in response to comments by then U.S. Senator Rick Santorum that were criticized as anti-gay by gay rights groups and some politicians, sex columnist and gay rights activist Dan Savage began a campaign to associate Santorum's surname with a sexual innuendo. Savage asked his readers to coin a definition for Santorum that would offend the senator. He announced the winner as, quote, the frothy mixture of lube and fecal matter that is sometimes the byproduct of anal sex, unquote. Savage created a website to promote this definition, which became a prominent search result for Santorum's name on several web search engines. All of that from Wikipedia. And that's Rick Santorum's Google problem. And to this day, John, as I'm sure you know, if you Google just Santorum, that's the first hit.
Yeah, and, Jon Stewart has on The Daily Show has made a lot of sport of this, although last night, I don't know if you caught him, he said he was shredding all of his Santorum ass jokes for the foreseeable future.
All right. So what's next for Rick Santorum? We've got under a minute. Are people watching his fundraising, his organizing? Is he going to win New Hampshire? What's your angle as somebody who knows him well?
I think it's a short arc. I think he will raise money. He is raising money ferociously in the next couple of days. The problem is he doesn't have the staff or the capability to know what to do with it. He will not win New Hampshire. The current polling has him still under, still in single digits. The question is, does Romney somehow falter? If Romney falters, then he might be able to make some kind of a challenge in South Carolina. But basically, I don't think he has the infrastructure. I don't think he'll have the money. And I don't think he has the staying power. Once the national press starts to look at the full breadth and depth of his record and some of the things he said and avowed in the past, I think he's basically done.
But if Romney's only going to get 25% of the Republican primary vote, especially in places like South Carolina and Florida in the South, which are coming up, then the rest of that vote has to go somewhere. And they've already been through Gingrich and, you know, Perry and et cetera.
Right. And as long as Perry stays in, and apparently he's staying in South Carolina, that's very helpful to Romney because it kind of splits the vote of the people who are left. And Gingrich, I think, is over, but he's going to come roaring back and go at Romney. Brian, I think I wrote a year ago that it's going to be Romney. I don't see any path for anybody else, and that includes Santorum.
Could you see Santorum as a working-class root social conservative as the vice presidential nominee with Mitt Romney?
I can't. I know people are suggesting that. I think it would be too northeast. I think they need somebody from the south or the west, somebody that's not in the race right now, because the longer this goes, the uglier it gets between the combatants, and it's tough to then make friends do a treaty or something. Too controversial.
Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush in 1980, but it doesn't happen every year. John Baer, columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, who has covered Rick Santorum for a long time. Extremely informative. Thank you very much for giving us so much
time. Thanks for having me, Brian. I appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. As the GOP shuffles through the various candidates, we invite you now to play the candidate shuffle at our politics website. It's freecountry.org. It's an interactive game in which you can pick the candidate whose words you most agree with to see just how closely you match up to one of the 2012 hopefuls. The way it works is you don't know which candidates say what. You just click on what closely matches your opinion, and you might be surprised at what you discover. It's right now on our politics website. It's freecountry.org. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Still to come this hour, the top political risks to the economy for 2012 and confessions of an African-American gentrifier in Hamilton Heights. Stay with us.